Welcome back to Respecting the Beer. My name is Gary Arndt, and with me, as usual, is brewer Bobby Fleshman and Allison McCoy Fleshman. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Great.
We've talked about kind of the origin superhero story of you guys, how you got into beer, how you started the brewery, and why anyone wants to do this is probably crazy. Now we want to start getting into beer and talking about beer. And I am reminded of something that was said in a Supreme Court decision by Justice Stuart Potter. It was a court case on pornography. And he basically said, I don't know if I can define it, but I know it when I see it. And that has been the working definition of pornography by the Supreme Court ever since. With beer, most people would identify a beer if they were served a beer. But if you were to ask people what beer is, I don't know if most people could do it. So the question then is, what's beer?
What is beer?
That's funny. Beer porn exists in my life, so you kind of brought that together.
That's the title of the folder for all of the beer photos we have. Is the beer the good photos? Is the beer porn?
Have I mentioned we have a tank on display showing beer happen in real time? Anyway, I digress.
What is beer?
What is beer?
There are four ingredients in beer.
Well, without going into a deep dive of the thousands and thousands and thousands of years prior to beer. Or whatever, what is going on is fermentation, right? And if you go back in time, that might have been grapes, it might have been honey. It eventually became cultivated malt or barley that was malted, and that became beer. We'll go into all of that. But fermentation happens everywhere in nature. I think there are primates that get drunk on fruits that naturally ferment.
And just for the kids who didn't pay attention in science class, fermentation is what?
Fermentation.
You're going to make this not fun at all. It's when yeast poop out alcohol. It's quite lovely.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of ways that we could take that. Yeast pooping out alcohol. That's one really
along
concise
with CO2,
way to summarize
carbon
it.
Carbon dioxide and some other things.
Yeah. The yeast that brewers work with is what I know best. But
I've had some nights where I would be defined as yeast.
You know, that's the, yep.
So yeah, taking glucose, which is a simple sugar, and turning it into alcohol and carbon dioxide is the process that I'm most familiar with. And that's what brewers think about. There are lots of parallel processes that create the flavors of what we call beer, but that is the very most basic way to describe what's happening. We take fungus from nature that we call yeast, single-celled fungus, and that they then are fed sugar, and we give them the right conditions. They make alcohol for us from barley that has been prepared for them. And Allison's shaking. She wants to go back or
no,
add?
I'm just in terms of a, there's a very general idea of what is beer. We often joke that it's liquid bread. And so the ingredients in bread, you've got your flour, you've got your yeast, you probably got some other additives and such, but beer really is grain, water, yeast, and hops. Those four simple things come together. Now, granted, the coming together is where you just dove right into. But, you know, it's kind
but what
of...
What is fermentation, though? That's what Gary was
Well, that's
asking.
What makes a beer.
Yeah.
So is that the question, then? Is it, what point does it become a beer?
Well, yeah, and that's why I asked the question, because it really is...
It's once we add the
something
yeast.
Something that most people probably, you know... Again, they know when they see it.
Yep.
But what is it? Yep. Wine undergoes fermentation. Mm-hmm. There are other beverages that do as well. We don't recognize those as beer.
I think one of the disconnects might be is that you'll drink pre-fermented wine, as in just grape juice, but you normally don't drink pre-fermented beer, which is the wort. It's the sugar water that you get from the grain.
And I enjoy it.
You do, and you're weird. It's not. It's fine. It's sweet. You can definitely tell.
Lots
you can
of energy there. Yeah.
You can get the precursors of the beer that it will become, but those yeast really do some magic.
I will try not to throw winemakers under the bus, but there are a lot of compounds found in beer, health wise, that are not found in wine, and that includes certain proteins and minerals, and well, tannins are found in wine, of course, but you get those in beer as well. So where are we defining beer? When does it become beer? I think I should have said those yeast are consuming glucose, but they start in beer as consuming maltose. Maltose is two sugars that are linked together in a certain way. And to the best of my knowledge, wine yeast is not terribly great at working with those molecules. We have selected over time as brewers those yeast that can metabolize them, ultimately turning them into what we call beer. So,
but we often laugh in the brewery how you just make wort. Like the brewers just make the wort. Right. The yeast make the beer.
Right.
So it's really a yeast centric.
Yeah, we pamper them. We make it just exactly how they need it to be. And we add oxygen and we add all these things. And then when they're done, we flush them down the drain. I mean, they live a luxurious
poor little
experience.
Things.
Well, or they make it to the belly of a cow. But they have an end soon after they make the beer. But we do pamper them. We understand our yeast really well. And I think there's a little more terroir in the wine world. You sort of let things go with the seasons. But with beer, you have strict control over every single variable to make the same product every time, even though we are dealing with variable inputs because it's an agricultural product mm-hmm. by nature. It's just sort of the two natures of those two industries. We celebrate vintage with wine, and we tend to expect the same every time from a brewer. That's a big a sidetrack, but yeah, just painting way out.
Remember,
there.
The question was, what is beer?
Yeah, what is beer? I think you have to start by the modern definition. This is really motivated by modern Germany, modern England. You have to start with barley, and you have to germinate that and do what we call malt it, which is to say germinate and it sprouts. I won't go into germination too in depth, but you trick that seed into growing. It becomes softer, and then we cut that process short and cook it to generate some toasty flavors.
It's pretty much like a barley oatmeal.
Yeah, really kind of is.
And then we just drain off the water, and we leave the sludge.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even have to malt it.
It does not sound sexy at all.
Oh, you mean in the brewing process?
Yeah.
But to jump forward to the brewing process is to disregard everything that's done before the brewer starts, because the brewer starts with malt, and malt is created by what are known as maltsters. And maltsters are people who soften that grain and prepare it for the brewer.
Take a moment and think about what the business card says or how you would introduce yourself on an airplane. I'm a maltster.
Right.
It's just awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a spelling you get used to over time. But so there you go. So in the modern definition of what is beer, you need to start with a barley and sometimes wheat. And you need to somehow get access to those starches inside. And the maltsters have figured that out, but so a brewer is independent of maltsters. So here we go. We hydrate it in the brewery, and we boil it. And I'll get into all those steps that precede the adding of the yeast. But here we go.
I'm just your dive deep. Yep, go for it.
At the end of the day, you're making a concoction that yeast can ferment. And it would end up being too sweet. So we have chosen over time different kinds of spices to balance that sweetness. So we got the alcohol, hooray, but now we're looking for a palatable product. And we've landed on, in modern context, hops. So that the hops give you that bitterness to balance that sweetness against. And that really does summarize what it is to be a beer. You really have just that grain in that water with that yeast plus those hops.
So the alcohol comes from the conversion of sugars. Where's the sugar coming from? Is it added or is it coming naturally from the malt?
So malt they're sometimes called berries in other contexts. They're grass. It's grass that we've cultivated over 10,000 years, selected it for making bread and beer. And they've been selected to make larger and larger kernels, seeds, berries, depends on your context. And at the center of those seeds are these starchy centers. And that starchy center is what gives those sugars once you break that starch down.
In the creation of spirits like whiskey, which is also grain-based, there's a process where they create a mash, but obviously it's later distilled. Where does that process diverge from beer making? At what point?
Right. So the thing about making spirits is you're really mostly looking to produce ethanol at the end of the day. You're not really worried about any, say, so-called off flavors that might come about by mistreatment of your fermentation. Now, I'm not a distiller. and I know that there is some thought and some science behind what gets transferred in distillation from the wash, which is what it's called in that context. But in general, you're just looking for ethanol production. So you still have your yeast combined with your wash, and that's breaking down those starches into sugars and alcohol. And then that gets distilled off and the rest of it. So you start with a really low quality grain in general because you're just looking for something to fuel that ethanol production. But with beer, you're looking for the whole profile. Nothing escapes. So you have to nail the whole process in terms of fermentation. Temperature is the most obvious. pH, there's mineral content. There's so many different things you got to think about because those yeasts have got to be top performers. And the yeast itself, by the way. Because the yeast that you can use to make spirit, it really is just needs to be robust. It doesn't need to have any finesse at all involved. So that's really where they diverge because once you have your fermented wash, you can then go about separating that from your grain and then you can distill it off and produce your spirit. But with beer, you're, like I said, you're taking that fermentation all the way to completion and then you make sure that that beer stays cold and carbonated mm-hmm. and ultimately you might even add hops in the fermenter along the way, but
well, another thing along the way for beer. Is it the color that you get? So the difference of the color from like a whiskey or a beer, the color originates from the grain. Whereas a whiskey, you're probably going to have it originate from the barrels that it was aged and it would have started clear when it was in the barrels. So that mash, even though it kind of up to that point of extracting the sugars from the grain, but then with the beer, there's so much more a history of that mash in the glass you're actually drinking, whereas not necessarily the same with spirits.
Right. You order your barrels if you make bourbon. You order them with a certain char and a certain toast. You even see this with wine as well. You're getting flavors and colors from your barrels in the spirit world. Yeah, it's all very clear.
In the spirit world.
So then hops. Like, so you talked about four ingredients, mm-hmm. and then this is the traditional German Reinheitsgebot. You have water, yeast, malt, and hops. So we've kind of talked about the malt, the yeast makes the alcohol, water is obviously water. Where do the hops come into play? Is it at what stage in the process?
In the process, yeah. The motivation was to balance that, and also the preservative property, balance that sweetness, but then the preservation of that liquid is also important. I think that was Pliny the Elder and later Hildegard von Bingen mm-hmm. yeah, of Germany.
Bavaria.
I'm sorry.
At
yeah,
the time, Germany. I'm yeah, not sure.
It was several.
It was 1100 something.
I defer to Gary on the history there, but
I believe it was Hildegard of Bingen, Saint Hildegard. Yep. She was an abbess who wrote extensively on beer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, a botanist and astronomer and all kinds
of things. But rumor has it she was the first one to add the hops.
Well, she was the one to identify the preservative nature of hops in beer, as far as I know. But when did it become, you asked when, in the process, is it coming into play? So if you take hops, there's a couple of things that we use them for in terms of the flavor. One is the bitterness. Coincidentally, also gives you that preservative quality, but you get flavors and aromas too. And there's these oils, the essential oils that are involved. And
the exact same type that are the fresh cut grass smell you get. Terpenes.
Yeah, there's all sorts of oils that we look at in hops in a modern context. In the old days, you might not have cared much about that. You might have been focused only on the bittering and on the preservative quality.
And when you say bittering, you mean to balance out the sweetness of the malt.
Yeah. So in the old days, you would just throw those hops into a boiling kettle of this, what we call wort. And that wort is that liquid that's been separated from that grain. And it contains all those sugars that will later become alcohol. So you in that boil, you toss these hops and you let it boil quite a long time. And in modern times, 60 minutes. And older times when you didn't have as strong of a boil, it might take 3 hours. So they would toss these whole cone hops. They look a lot like they're cousins to cousin. They are a little bit like marijuana when you see them for the first time. But you can pull them off like a little kind of meets, I was going to say,
they look like
artichoke.
Baby pine cones.
Yeah, an artichoke. But you toss them in right off the plant, boil it for 60 minutes or more. And you're going to be mostly left with that bittering acid and not much else. except for that preservative quality. But now in later times, we've been breeding these hops to give us more aromas and more flavors. We've really latched onto that. And that's not something that Germany did. Germany didn't care so much about that feature of hops. And so it really took an American hop revolution to take us where we are today. So that's about 50 years of hop breeding in the U.S. to give us those aromas. And then those hops don't get put in for 60 minutes. Those hops get thrown into that kettle at the moment that you stop boiling, because you don't want to lose those oils. You also might just throw them in like a tea into a finished beer and then steep them. And that's called dry hopping.
I was just going to push you along to say that you can really, in the boiling, before you add the yeast, it's boiling, then you have to chill it really quickly. But you can add the hops pretty much any time when that boil's going, all the way through to, you can even add it after it's done fermenting, it's been in the keg, it's come into the glass, and then you can actually add it into your beer as you're sitting here drinking it. So there's actually no...
You should consider doing that.
It's
like a garnish.
It's very aggressive.
Like a hop garnish.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've done it. Actually, Lion's Tail, I'll give a shout out to a brewery nearby.
They have those fancy tea mug things that they fill with hops, and then they pour the beer through, and then you let it right steep for a few minutes.
In real time.
It's aggressive in the hop flavor when you do that.
Allison's not a huge fan.
I like my malty beers.
I think she likes the balance they provide, but beyond that, that's the limitation of her love for hops.
They're lovely.
So with that, I now kind of want to do a speed round.
Because
each one of these things I'm going to bring up, and some that you're going to have to bring up, we can do full... deep dive episodes on.
Yep.
But there's a lot of terms out there that people have heard. Beer is obviously an overarching kind of thing. But now then I want you to kind of briefly describe and explain what each of the types of beer are.
Oh.
And let's start with an ale. What is an ale a subset of beer?
Yes. I would say the ales are going to be the top fermenting yeast. So the yeast will either find their way when they've been thrown in, the beer or the wort's been cooled, the yeast go in to eat the sugars and make CO2 and make ethanol, which is the alcohol that we consume. And the yeast will find themselves, if they're an ale, they will float to the top of the vessel. And if they are a lager, they will float to, they don't really float to the bottom. Is that a phrase?
Sink
to the bottom. But yes. And the ales with that have a slightly different feel. They're creamier. They're more robust in malt flavor. They're just overall more glorious, because I might be partial to the ales.
I have an intimate relationship with all these fermentations that happen. And it's a little bit simplified to say that it's top and bottom, but Allison's basically right there. Ales happen.
I am very much right there. Unless it's not an ale or a lager, then it's kind of in the middle, but...
Yeah, they tend to
those exist too.
Yeah, they tend to be on top because they tend to be fermented warmer. And when you ferment warmer, you tend to evolve carbon dioxide more quickly. And it tends to drive the yeast to the top. And if they have any what I'll call flocculant characteristic, that's a word that really means, do they have a tendency to group against one another? To stick against one another, then they tend to raft and they tend to ride bubbles to the top.
The little yeast parties.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So when you learn, this is for the homebrewers out there, when you learn about flocculation, you're thinking about
how it's a family-friendly show.
Yes.
Yeah, right? It's the F word.
Once you go flocculation.
Yeah, so when they group together, they tend to make larger and larger and larger bundles. I mean, literally like 10,000 in one bundle at the end of their fermentation. They will do so, and then they drop to the bottom of your fermentation vessel. And so when home brewers or anyone that's somewhat familiar with brewing hears me say that more flocculent yeast tend to be on the top of the vessel, it's counterintuitive. And the reason is because they're riding the carbon dioxide that's evolving from the beer.
Okay.
Okay, that's beer. Yeah.
That's ale.
Sorry, yeah.
Pale ale.
Ooh. Pale ale. Awesome. So I'm going to butcher this story, but we're going to go with it because it's fun. A pale ale is actually a hoppy beer, which is frustrating. At least if it's an American pale. A British pale, it's going to be more malty. But a pale ale is the idea that you actually have a light-colored beer. And light-colored was actually very hard to do because I believe the grain, when they would roast it, would always catch fire. And so they had to basically roast it till it was dark. And you get like a really, really dark beer when you roast or when you toast your bread too long, it turns dark, kind of that burnt color. Same thing with the grain. But to get it to where you were roasting it, but had enough temperature control that you could get the grain to be just slightly amber and or light, that was actually really hard. And it was an industrial like milestone that they reached. And the pale ale then became almost like a status symbol that you could afford a pale ale because it was a very rare thing and hard to do. Did I get it right?
Yeah, there's seven podcasts there. I won't even go into any of
them. But it was like, but she nailed it. Was like it was born around the Industrial Revolution when steam engines were all the rage. They were able to then really control the temperature.
Yeah,
of the killing.
Without going into it,
the maltsters. Oh yeah, the
I was about
maltsters
to say,
are going to
come
back.
This is why we have to always bring back the maltsters. That they were able to create these light colored malts, and it led to the number one malt that's ever been made is the Pilsner malt. And it led to the Czech Pilsner, which led to the German Pilsner.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So, India Pale Ale.
Mm.
As I'm drinking one of those, the original one. Yeah, England made the India Pale Ale, and there are many, many stories, and I'm sure we'll talk about this at length at some point. But one of the stories is that you would make a hop that could survive voyage from the United Kingdom to the colonies in India. And so one of the stories goes that they would hop up their pale ale and that it would be able to survive a warm voyage across the Horn of Africa. And there's some truth to that, but the reality of it is they were sending hoppy porters more than they were IPAs, like to a factor of 4 to 1. But nevertheless, the India pale ale originated in England. It was a pale ale that was hopped and also more alcoholic in general, but again, you find conflicting evidence as to it may have been lower alcohol, in fact. But in every case, it's always hoppy. Yeah.
Double, triple, quadruple IPA.
Well, right.
Just more hops?
Yeah. A lot of this is from the American craft beer revolution, right. These names. The double IPA, I think, was the first one was Pliny. I know it's pronounced Pliny, but commercially it's pronounced Pliny the Elder by Russian River Brewing Company. And that was the first of its kind. At least it's credited as being that. And that was only in the last 20 years. So this is really in the last two decades we see these monikers.
A porter.
Oh, that's a long answer. Allison can start on that one.
It's delicious. Mm. Porters are dark.
You can just run it through ChatGPT, tell you to summarize.
Oh my God,
like
that's true.
One paragraph.
Yeah,
that's porter. True. Porter. What's a porter? It's not a stout. I'll say that. So porter is going to be sweet, malty, dark. Something about porter was actually the original, I believe, before the stout.
It was stout porter. It became stout. So yeah. Porter evolved into stout.
Right. And the difference, and I always get this confused. And I always have to look it up right before I say it. And I don't have my phone in front of me. So a stout is roasted unmalted barley.
Correct.
And a porter is malted, not roasted barley.
It's roasted, but lower proportions.
Lower proportions of roasted.
In the recipe.
But it's malted, whereas a stout is an unmalted roasted barley.
Yeah, in significant proportions. Yeah.
Yes.
You get a lot of...
I did it. Yay.
Yeah, you get a lot of flaked barley as well. So you get a lot... Yeah, well, there's a lot of that in an Irish stout, unmalted product.
A lager. And you see a lot of beers that most people drink are a lager. Again, I don't know if most people could tell you the difference between a lager and an ale or anything else. So what is a lager?
Many people will come in and say, oh, I'll have the lager. And we're like, well, which one? And they're like, well, the lager. We're like, we have seven. So there's so many different types of lagers.
I'm not sure how to answer that in a speed round. But
it's a top fermenting. Oh, sorry. No, bottom fermenting yeast. Yes. There we go. The other one.
Yes. In Germany... this Rheinheitsgebot happened, but alongside the Rheinheitsgebot defined those ingredients by which you can make beer and call it beer. But there was also rules of time of year that you could brew because it beer that was brewed in the summer would go sour. And really what they did in making that rules with it, they started to self-select yeast that can survive the colder months. And over time, that meant that the ale yeast got outcompeted. And then you had this new kind of yeast that could endure these colder temperatures. There's a very long, interesting story about how they connected the lager strain of yeast to other strains in history, but very fascinating stuff.
And when it comes to me versus Bobby, which is always an important thing to say, I would say that I'm the ales, you're the lagers. Because I think ales are just so much better.
I'm drinking an ale right now.
I
love them all. Yeah.
No, that's not fair. Lagers, I think, are technically more challenging to make.
They are a technical marvel, and it really took the German approach to brewing to make them what they are. And they led to a million different innovations along the way.
Pilsner.
Speaking of modern marvels, yeah. Pilsner may be the quintessential, and maybe the peak of the mountain in terms of beer-making prowess. Everybody says order the Pilsner first when you go to a brewery.
It's true. It's just like when you go to a diner and it's like you just start with the bacon and eggs. If they can't do eggs right, you don't even care about the omelet that they're going to screw up.
And the Germans make a beer called a Helles, and that is sort of the response to the Pilsner originally. So both of those beers are the most difficult ones to make in the world, in my opinion, that I've come across. They're just perfectly balanced, clear beers that have nothing to hide behind. They should be very, very what people call crushable. They should be able to be consumed without thinking about them. But if you're a brewer, you can get lost in the details if they're perfectly made. They're just amazing. And there's too many things to say to fill that speed round up.
A sour.
Oh, please let me talk about this one. Also delicious. The sours are, I think, the most misunderstood type of beer, in that they are normally naturally fermented with, you'll open up the vats, so they're not necessarily bad, but they have certain notes that in some beers would be an indicator that they've gone bad. They're also made with Brettanomyces a lot of times, which is a different kind of yeast.
Which
is that
true?
Which
I should say is British fungus. That's how that translates in Latin.
Brettanomyces. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Because the Brits were the ones that isolated inadvertently.
Huh. Go team. Anyway, so it's a delicious beer, but there's so many different types of sours. I wouldn't say that there's necessarily one kind of sour. Would you?
No. Originally, every beer was sour because there was bacteria in all the process. There wasn't a microbiology didn't come about more than 150 years ago. So you certainly saw that would happen with every single beer. And so you saw people drink milds, and English milds were beers that were young. They may be dark, they may be light, but they were young and they weren't sour. And porters tended to be sour because they were older. And then the people working behind the bar were called publicans, and they would blend these milds and these porters and these sometimes stouts, and they would create your drink of choice. They have three pulls. That's all they had. They had three beers to pull from. Eventually, they had pails and IPAs, but they were able to blend those to the customer spec. How sour do you want it? But yeah, there's so many episodes there.
A Bock
is Bobby's favorite.
So a Bock is to malt what IPA is to hops, what a double IPA is to hops.
That is true.
It's extremely malty and extremely balanced if done well. Mm-hmm. Malty doesn't mean sweet. So if you get a Bock that's hard to drink, if you can't finish a glass, but you like the flavor of it, that's much like an indulgent dessert, right? It's not what you want to see as a brewer, though. You want someone to finish a glass, and then at that last sip, want the next glass. So that's my little soapbox about malty versus sweet. But yeah, you're really celebrating some of these amber malts that the Germans have perfected, and you bring up the alcohol too, because that's a flavor component in a Bock.
Yeah, one of our highest alcohol beers is our Eisbock, which is
14.5%. So, but Bock's range.
You don't want to.
There's so many different kinds of Bocks. You can even make a Weizen.
Is that the Gertrude?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah. I bought your last bottle.
No.
Well, we have others.
Stashed away.
Yeah, we stash them away.
There's a lot of other beer types out there, but I think those are like the big ones.
One worth mentioning is the smoked beer, the Rauch beer, because every beer was smoked.
Only to you.
No. Every beer was smoked, just as every beer was soured at some point, because you didn't have the means to indirectly make your malts. So everything was directly fired and directly smoked. It wasn't by intention. It just came from the process. So only in the modern kiln, the process by which we toast our grain today, can we separate the smoke from the heat and now make not malty or not smoky beers. But that's neither here nor there.
So you have to buy like specialty smoked malts.
If you want today, yes. Yeah. Bamberg, Germany only makes smoked malt. There must be a dozen breweries there that make it. And I think the Rauch beer is...
I've been there.
I think, yeah. And they're very drinkable, right? They're, if you've had enough smoked beers, they do them well. But you can get those out of balance if you don't watch it.
All right. I think this is kind of a roadmap for a lot of what we're going to be talking about in future episodes. We just covered them briefly, but there's a lot of science, a lot of history, a lot of culture behind a lot of these different types of beer. And we'll be covering them on future episodes of Respecting the Beer.
Thanks.
Excellent.